This is Bobby Hardy with the commercial news for Vermilion County for Friday, September 18th, 2020. We'll start with a cover story. Hospitals see leadership change. Out of Danville, OSF Healthcare, Sacred Heart Medical Center, and Danville will see a leadership change, but OSF officials say it will not impact services provided or patient care. Bradley Solberg, president of OSF Healthcare St. James, John W. Albert Rich Medical Center in Pontiac has been named interim president of OSF Healthcare Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. He will begin transitioning into his new role in mid-October. Jared Rogers, who is the current president of OSF Sacred Heart and OSF Healthcare Heart of Mary Medical Center in Urbana, will continue to serve as president for OSF Heart of Mary. His experience and knowledge at OSF Heart of Mary will be key in meeting the needs of the hospital and community, OSF officials stated in a press release. In his time at OSF St. James, Brad has proven to be a dynamic leader, Rogers said. I fully expect he will bring that same spirit to OSF Sacred Heart. I look forward to collaborating with Brad as we continue the OSF mission in both the Danville and Urbana communities. Solberg, meanwhile, will work to carry forward a culture of collaboration that provides a safe patient care environment that also fosters innovation and creativity. To offer excellence in care, leaders must spend time and attention developing and supporting a culture of caring and empathy. It is evident that Dr. Rogers and the other leaders at OSF Sacred Heart have done just that. I feel blessed to be joining this team and look forward to the opportunity to serve, said Salzberg. Solberg will be responsible for directing all internal operations at OSF Sacred Heart while ensuring that high-quality and cost-effective health care is delivered to patients. Solberg will also continue his duties at OSF St. James, where he has served as president since 2015. Prior to that, he spent 14 years as CEO at Hammond Henry Hospital in Geneseo. Solberg is an active member in the American College of Healthcare Executives. He earned a bachelor's degree in business administration / healthcare administration at Concordia College in Moorhead, Minnesota, and received his master's degree in healthcare administration from the University of Minnesota. According to Libby Allison, media relations coordinator with OSF Healthcare, no other changes are occurring in regards to leadership roles or staffing at the Danville Hospital. The other cover story is out of Springfield. Illinois says no to deferral program. Illinois plans to continue withholding federal payroll taxes on behalf of its 62,000 employees despite a program President Trump launched in August that allows workers to defer paying those taxes through the end of the year. Quote, I am not supporting a deferral that would double workers' taxes after January and put Social Security further at risk. I mean, that's essentially what this would do, end quote, Illinois Comptroller Susana Mendoza said during an interview Thursday. Trump announced the program in a memoranda August 8th. It applies to the 6.2% tax that employers withhold from their employees' Social Security benefits. It often appears on pay stubs as FICA, the Federal Insurance Contributions Act. The program is available to employees who earn less than $104,000 per year. The intent is to temporarily boost workers' income during the COVID-19 pandemic, but the taxes that would be deferred would have to be repaid after January 1st. Then the employees' withholding would double to 12.4% until the amount of taxes that were deferred is repaid. So far, the only major employers taking part in the program is the federal government, Mendoza said. Most states and many large private sector employees have publicly stated that they will not take part. Mendoza said Governor J.B. Pritzker has already announced that the agencies under his purview will not take part in the program, nor will any of the other state constitutional officers, Attorney General, Secretary of State, State Treasurer, and Attorney General. Just on its face, as a policy, to me it seems really bad policy to essentially tell people that they can have a little bit of money on the front end and then pay twice as much on the back end and be prepared to do so, Mendoza said. I reached out to the governor early on to let them know my position, that we would not be doing it for any of our employees, and of course, recommended that no one do it because I think it's a terrible policy, she said. And it's really kind of a cruel hoax. I mean, the president's essentially dangling this carrot in front of people, and I would say this is that perfect scenario where all that glitters is not gold. According to an analysis by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, a worker earning $50,000 a year would see a temporary increase of $119.23 in each two-week pay period. But at the end of the year, that person would owe $1,073.08 in deferred taxes. Mendoza said she believes the program was devised to boost Trump's re-election campaign. I mean, it couldn't be any clearer, she said. And the fact that the president this week turned around and said that if he gets re-elected, he will forgive the payroll deferral and people wouldn't have to pay it back. I mean, to me, that's just a clear attempt to buy votes. He does not have the legal authority to forgive the debt. And he doesn't tell people that even if he could, which thankfully he does not, if he did, he'd be doing it at the expense of bankrupting Social Security, which millions of Americans rely upon. Meanwhile, Mendoza said the bigger threat to the economy is the possibility that Congress will not approve an aid package to help state and local governments that have seen precipitous declines in revenue due to the recession brought on by the pandemic, something Pritzker also warned about earlier this week, preparing for what he called a nightmare scenario if Congress fails to pass an aid package. Pritzker said he has asked state agency heads to make plans for a 5% budget cut in the current fiscal year, which ends June 30th, 2021, and a 10% cut for the following fiscal year. The Democratic-controlled U.S. House passed such a bill in May, but it has languished in the Republican-controlled Senate, where GOP leaders have argued that the federal government shouldn't be asked to bail out states that were already in financial trouble before the COVID-19 pandemic. Quote, "We're not asking the government to come in and bail us out for the self-inflicted wounds of the past," end quote, Mendoza said. Also on the cover is information about the library. The Danville Public Library assistant Quinn Hazel Baker was dressed as Mother Nature to greet everyone on Thursday for the library's curbside costume days. Every Thursday this fall from 3 to 5 p.m., library patrons who schedule their curbside pickup for items can meet their favorite characters. A previous costume was Glenda the Good Witch. The library is located at 319 North Vermilion Street. Now to the community briefs. Creation Guild to meet October 7th through 8th. The Sisters of Providence of St. Mary of the Woods, Indiana, Art and Soul Creation Guild is open to all who have a love of art and more. October sessions will take place in the Lodge, located behind Providence Spirituality and Conference Center. The sessions will take place from 9:30 a.m. to noon on October 7th and 6 to 8:30 p.m. on October 8th EDT. Both sessions are the same, and participants may choose the time that best fits their schedule. All those joining the guild will be asked to pay an annual membership fee of $30 paid at the time of registration, and participants will pay $5 for each session they attend. For more information, log on to events.sisterof-providence.org or call 812-535-2952. Or email provctr@spsmw.org. Linkin Park to host free concert. Saturday, October 10th at 3 p.m., the Danville Symphony Orchestra will return to Linkin Park to present an afternoon concert. The concert will be free and open to the public due to the generosity of title sponsor FLP Wealth Advisors of Raymond James and other sponsors including Double S Liquid Feed and Liquid Feed Transport. Audiences will be asked to maintain appropriate distance and encouraged to bring lawn chairs, blankets, food, and drink to enjoy while soaking up the live music. The rain date is Sunday, October 11th at 3 p.m. The concert will be streamed live on Twitch and recorded for downloading onto other social media sites as well. In local news, vacant house a total loss in fire out of Danville. Firefighters were on the scene of a vacant house fire late Wednesday to the early morning hours of Thursday. The Danville Fire Department was dispatched to 109 Ohio Street at 11:05 p.m. Wednesday for a house fire. Upon arrival, units found a house fully involved in fire already through the roof, according to Chief Don McMasters. The department set up an aerial master stream to extinguish the fire and used hand lines to protect the exposures next to the house. This was a vacant city-owned property that had previously burned. The damage is listed as a total loss with a value of $3,000. No injuries were reported. Cause is considered incendiary. We'll move now to the obituaries. Out of Danville, Clark. Colleen Ann Clark, 62, passed away at 7:21 p.m. Saturday, September 12th at home. Cremation rites have been accorded and a memorial service will be scheduled at a later date. Out of Catlin, Hoyt Michelle Shelley A. Dickon Hoyt, 55, went to be with the Lord on September 9th, 2020 at home as her husband held her hand. Services are at 3 p.m. Saturday, September 26th. At Second Church of Christ, 3350 East Voorhees Street, Danville. Out of Fairmont, Woods, Ronald D. Woods, 68, passed away at 11:25 p.m. Wednesday, September 16th, 2020 at his home. Funeral services will be at noon, Monday, September 21st, 2020 at Robeson Chapel, Catlin. Burial at the Pate Cemetery in rural Catlin. Visitation is 10 a.m. till the service time on Monday at Robeson Chapel. Out of Silverdale, Washington, Ross, Helen Maud Knight Ross, 90, passed away at 9:58 p.m. on Tuesday, September 8th, 2020, in Silverdale, Washington, with her husband and daughter by her side. Helen's ashes will be interred at Woodland Cemetery in Indianola at a later date. Out of Williamsport, Indiana, Fox, Scott C. Fox, 63, went to be with his Heavenly Father on Saturday, September 12, 2020, at Franciscan Health in Lafayette, Indiana. Visitation at Grady Funeral Home in Williamsport on Friday, September 18, 2020, from 5 to 8 p.m. Services will be Saturday, September 19, 2020, at 2 p.m. Interment at Highland Cemetery in Williamsport. Harris. Phyllis Irene Thompson Harris, age 93, of Ames, passed away of natural causes at North Crest Community on Wednesday, September 16, 2020. Private graveside services will be held at a later date in the Ames Municipal Cemetery. Brown. Maristella Marcy Brown, 64, of Danville, passed away Monday, September 14, 2020, at Carl Hospital in Urbana. A memorial visitation will be held from noon to 2 p.m. on Saturday, September 19, 2020, at Kruger Cohen Pape Funeral Home, 10 East William Street in Danville, where IDPH guidelines requiring mandatory masks and social distancing will be upheld. Memorial service will follow at 2 p.m. on Saturday, September 19th at Kruger Cohen Pape Funeral Home. Private family burial at Danville National Cemetery will take place at a later date. Dickon, Richard A. Dickon. A memorial service will be held at 3 p.m. Saturday, September 26th at Second Church of Christ, 3350 East Voorhees Street in Danville, celebrating the lives of Shelby Hoyt and her brother Richard Ricky L. Dickon, who passed away on May 17th, 2020. Due to COVID restrictions, all attending must wear masks and practice social distancing. Hughes. Dennis George Hughes, 61, of Danville, passed away at 6:50 p.m. on September 10th, 2020, at his home in Danville. A private family service will be held at a later date. Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center is assisting the family with arrangements. As per Dennis's wishes, cremation rites will be accorded. Keller. Betty Ann Keller, 82, a resident of Autumn Trace Senior Community and formerly of Perrysville, passed away at 2:18 p.m. EDT, Monday, September 14, 2020, at Autumn Trace in Attica, Indiana. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. EDT, Monday, September 21st, 2020, at Deverter Funeral Home in Cayuga, Indiana. At the request of the family, cremation will be accorded following the visitation. We'll move on to local stories. Doug Toole of the Vermilion County Health Department confirmed Thursday one new positive case, a resident in their 50s, that brings the county's total number of positive cases to 475. The VCHD is also reporting 23,401 negative tests. Still in local news, virus temporarily closes City Hall, a credit union. A frontline Danville City Hall team member tested positive for COVID-19, causing the closing of the building, 17 West Main Street in Danville, through the end of the week to allow for a deep cleaning and to get other exposed employees tested. All non-infected staff will continue working at home during this time and be available via telephone during regular business hours, 8 a.m. to noon and 1 to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. Quote, unfortunately, as we all know, coronavirus infections are soaring in our county. Please let this be a reminder to help keep everyone safe by diligently wearing masks indoors, maintaining social distancing outdoors, and frequently sanitizing our hands, end quote, from Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. Vibrant Credit Union also has experienced a few positive COVID cases in its Danville and Covington, Indiana markets. To keep staff, members, and community safe while still serving its members, Vibrant will temporarily close its Covington branch. The Covington staff will run the Gilbert Street office in Danville. With this change, Vibrant will be working with reduced staffing and will need to temporarily update the Gilbert Street drive-through hours to 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. The office will be temporarily closed on Saturdays. Still in local news, firefighter training to close street Tuesday. The Danville Fire Department announces that Madison Street between Bowman Avenue and Collette Street will be closed for training beginning Tuesday, September 22nd, and weather permitting is scheduled to be completed by Thursday, September 24th. During this time, Madison Street will be closed and traffic will need to be rerouted. This street closure will only be in effect between 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. on each of the 3 days. This lane closure will begin at 8 a.m. Tuesday, September 22nd. The closure will affect motorists traveling west on Madison Street from Bowman Avenue. Please choose an alternative route to avoid delays. There will be a high volume of fire department traffic during these training operations. Motorists and pedestrians are urged to use caution when traveling in the work zone and be attentive to changes in traffic control. All of these events are tentatively scheduled, weather permitting. We'll move now to a letter to the editor, a document worth celebrating every year. September 17th to the 23rd is Constitution Week, a week-long celebration of the oldest and shortest governing document in the world. On September 17th, after 100 days of deliberation, the United States Constitution was framed. Just 4,400 words, our Constitution turned 233 years old September 17th, and, with only a few amendments, is basically the same document that laid out the governing laws at the founding of our country. This document is so important to the Daughters of the American Revolution that in 1955, said Holly Blair, NSDAR National Chair of Constitution Week, the National Society petitioned the United States Congress to approve an official annual celebration of our Constitution. The following year, on August 2, 1956, President Dwight D. Eisenhower declared that every September 17th thereafter would mark the beginning of a week-long celebration of this unique and innate founding document. Barbara Standish Chapter and the National Society Daughters of the American Revolution are proud of the DAR's involvement in the creation of this nationwide observance, and we celebrate it publicly to remind all Americans of its significance. This year, women around the United States celebrate one amendment in particular, the 19th Amendment, which guaranteed women's right to vote. Ratified on August 18, 1920, this year marks a century of our participation in the ballot. As daughters, said Blair, we should understand all of the amendments and especially the Bill of Rights. It is so important as an engaged citizen to be informed and educated. Celebrate our Constitution, our flag, and our country this year, and let your voices be heard, ladies. You earned it. Carol Hicks, Registrar Barbara Standish, Chapter, National Society Daughters of the American Revolution, Hoopston. From the sports section, Big Ten sprints toward unusual football season. This is from the Associated Press out of Indianapolis. Now that the Big Ten has rescheduled kickoff weekend, coaches and players can start the sprint to opening day. Expect a wild ride. After canceling spring football, limiting and sometimes pausing off-season workouts, shutting down full contact practices, and eventually postponing the season, the league's 14 university presidents and chancellors have given teams 5 weeks to accomplish what typically takes months, getting into football shape by late October for the start of a most unusual season. We're going to be ready to play on October the 24th, Ohio State coach Ryan Day said, referring to the new opening weekend. You know, the ramp up to that and the 20 hours of weekly practice and putting on pads has been well thought out. So we'll be ready. We'll play with a depth. Vocal critics of the school leaders who voted 11-3 to postpone all fall sports amid an August uptick in COVID-19 cases have been largely silenced by a unanimous vote that put Big Ten football back on the calendar alongside the ACC, Big 12, and SEC. Those who play the sport, teach the sport, and watch the sport almost universally expressed joy and relief Wednesday, knowing football will return. Like those other conferences, though, Big Ten football will look different in many ways. Stadiums will be mostly empty and tickets will not be sold to the public. The season has been reduced from 12 games to 8, with the opportunity for a 9th around December 19th conference championship game. Players will undergo daily antigen testing before practice, and if two tests confirm a positive result, the player must sit out 21 days before being cleared for game action. Those who contract COVID-19 must be cleared by a school-designated cardiologist before returning. Teams will have backup plans if the head coach or assistant falls ill. Not everyone is following the same script either. Indiana University plans to conduct daily testing starting Thursday. The league won't require it until September 30th. And though everyone understands the guidelines and policies, coaches may spend more time over the next few weeks contemplating how to properly sanitize practice facilities, meeting rooms, and locker rooms than crafting game plans, because the healthiest team could emerge as the league champ. My initial concerns were, how do you meet? How do you practice? How do you keep social distancing during your practice, but also in meetings and all the situations when you have close quarters, said Wisconsin athletic director and former football coach Barry Alvarez, who noted he's been assured it's achievable. To me, that was the hardest part, the suggesting your players and coaches to change in how you go about your day-to-day routine. On the field, there are other risks like injuries. While the Big Ten permitted teams to run and lift weights as well as doing light work in helmets for 12 hours per week over the past month, the intensity of full contact practices will pick up quickly. We'll move now to the Dear Annie section. Coronavirus concerns. Dear Annie, my husband is in the high-risk category for catching COVID-19, and we have lost family and friends due to the disease. The issue is that we love seeing our grandchildren, but some people in our family view the pandemic as a hoax and are lax about following safety precautions. This makes it dangerous for us to spend time with our grandchildren, as these family members also spend time with them. One relative even refuses to wear a mask in public. This attitude baffles me and hurts my husband. After talking to my friends, I have realized that this issue affects and divides many families, and the oldest members of the families are understandably more cautious. But what do we do? Do we stop all contact with the rest of our families? Tough questions. Dear Tough, first, I am so sorry for your loss. It's terrible that you had to watch this disease take your loved ones. To hear people dismiss it as a hoax must add another layer of pain. Please note that I am not a licensed medical professional and am not qualified to give medical advice, so what follows are my personal opinions. Please talk to your doctor for proper guidance. You indeed raise some tough questions, ones that many families throughout the country and the world are wrestling with right now. Even when all parties agree to take COVID-19 seriously, they can differ on what exactly seriously means. What seems reasonable to one person can seem paranoid to another, and to the next person not careful enough. I'm reminded of that old George Carlin joke. Have you ever noticed that everybody driving slower than you is an idiot, and anyone going faster than you is a maniac? While abstaining from socializing with anyone outside your household remains the safest option, risk is not binary. There are steps you can take to minimize the chance of spreading infection, but only if your family is willing to take those steps too. See if these relatives can agree to some basic ground rules, such as only gathering outside, standing 6 feet or more apart, and wearing masks. Explain again that your husband is at high risk for getting seriously ill and dying from this virus, and that you'd like to continue seeing them and your grandchildren if at all possible. If they still don't get on board, then yes, avoid seeing them in person for a while. I know it will be hard not to see the grandkids, but there are other ways to connect, such as telephone, FaceTime, or Skype. And it's better to forego a few months with them now to help ensure you'll be around to make memories with them for years to come. Dear Annie, is there a more protective mask or face guard system available to the public? My understanding is that most masks protect those around you but are not guaranteed for your own safety unless everyone wears them. Any advice you might have is deeply appreciated. Staying safe. Dear Staying Safe, masks help prevent us from spreading COVID-19 to others, and some recent data indicate that masks may also help reduce the risk of contracting a severe case. As for gaiters and face shields, the Center for Disease Control state that evaluation is ongoing, but their effectiveness is unknown at this time. They instead recommend masks with two or more layers of washable, breathable fabric worn over the nose and mouth and secured under the chin. Masks should not be worn by children younger than two and people who have trouble breathing or cannot remove a mask without assistance. As mentioned above, I am not a licensed medical professional and not qualified to give medical advice, so please talk to your doctor for proper guidance. There's a story out of Springfield, state unemployment rate at 11%. The unemployment rate in Illinois fell to 11% for the month of August, a decrease of a half a percent point from the previous month as the state added 66,000 non-farm jobs, according to preliminary figures released by the Illinois Department of Employment Security on Thursday. That was 2.6 percent points higher than the national rate for the month, which is 8.4%, according to the U.S. Department of Labor. The national rate reflected a decrease of 1.8 percentage points for the prior week. The state's unemployment rate, while decreasing, is still historically high, standing 7.2 percentage points above where it was a year ago. There are 695,000 unemployed workers in the state for the month, a decrease of 2.9% from the previous month, but an increase of 182.6% from the previous year as COVID-19 and associated economic restrictions continue to affect employment rates. Non-farm payroll employment is down by 428,700 jobs from a year ago. From April to August this year, the labor force has rebounded 3.6% or nearly 224,000 individuals. That's after a 4.6% decline from January to April, which affected 294,000 individuals, according to IDES. For the week ending September 12th, there were 27,384 initial unemployment claims in the state, which is up by 1,906 from the week prior, an increase of 7%, according to IDES. The number of continued claims, however, dropped by 8%, or 44,556 to 507,880. The release of unemployment figures came as the state reported another 25 COVID-19 related deaths in persons aged from their 30s to their 90s. That brought total virus related fatalities to 8,392. With that, we wrap up the commercial news for Vermilion County for Friday, September 18th. This has been Bobby Hardy. Stay safe and stay well.